It'll be in Matthew chapter 6. So Timothy McVeigh, would you pray for this service, please?
God, we want to thank you for the goodness of this day. Allow us to be in the house of God with the freedom we have in Jesus Christ. Pray for God to touch the vast anointing, open our ears to hear, and lips the things that we need to hear, and that we receive from the of our hearts, that we receive all the praise, all the honor, and all the glory in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Amen. All right. We are in Matthew chapter 6, and we finally are done with 14 and 15. We're going to start in verse 16. Moreover, when you fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. So, you know, fasting is something you don't hear a lot about. I don't fast often, but there have been times that I fast. Probably the greatest feature to fasting is just dying to yourself, okay? Just dying to yourself, denying yourself something. And if you're not used to fasting, it's miserable. It just is. It's just miserable. And I know people who are used to fasting. They can go for days and days. Just to give you an idea, Lester Roloff, once a year, would fast for 30 days. Once a year. And he would call the other pastors in his county to see how many were going to go along with him. And many would. Just gives you an idea of the difference in what we have for clergy today, okay? And they would fast for that period of time, and 30 days. So, but again, for me to fast is usually if there's some overbearing, terrible problem, I'm trying to get a hold of God, and I found just denying myself, absolutely, I'm not going to give in to anything that I need today, and praying to God, it does seem to get his attention better. That's been my experience, okay? Now, when you fast, if you have a partner, wife, husband, okay, check with them before you fast. Why? Because it says so in 1 Corinthians 7 that the two of you have a physical relationship. And it says, defraud ye not one another. Okay? You say, I'm going to fast. Well, you know, all right, husband, what if your wife needs you right now? Okay? She's going through a time where your embrace and, you know, your affection and or whatever would mean a lot to her. And well, I'm going to fast. Or vice versa. Okay? So it says, defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time. Okay? When you fast, okay? So the thing is, if you're married, you need the consent of your partner before you fast, okay? If you're going to carry that fast past bedtime. It says so in 1 Corinthians 7. The other day, we were having a special meeting, and my wife told me, I fasted today. She broke at night. We had a little meal together. She just wanted me to know I fasted through the day, and just a quiet thing. No one knows that. That's just something she wanted to pray and felt the Lord would have her do that. When Daniel fasted, there's actually a point there where it says he ate no pleasant bread nor sweet meat. Didn't say he went totally without food. He just said, you know what? And by the way, keep in mind, that's what he did at the beginning of the book of Daniel. Okay, to separate himself from the others and only eat what the Lord would have. And he just found a time where he said, you know, it'd be good for me to do that again. Just absolutely, what would pleasant bread and sweet meat be for you? Okay, where you'd say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to go for a period of time and touch none of that stuff. But yet you have a job, you're a mother, whatever, and you're trying to take care of children, and you're not going to be able to just go without food. Okay, So, or maybe you're, a diabetic or something of the sort where, you know, you're not going to be able to do that, okay? There are other ways to fast than just not having food, okay? And then there's just the plain old thing of saying, you know what, I'm not going to eat food. And when I was a younger man, we used to do it. My friends and I would do it for 3 days at a time. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure it ever was pleasing to God, you know, three guys together and we'd get done and run to a, you know, all night food buffet or something when we were done and, you know, eat like pigs when it was over. But, you know, and pretty well make up for everything we didn't eat for 3 days. And but at the same time, fasting has its own reward. If you're under spiritual oppression, you cannot believe the relief when you're done fasting. The absolute relief. That next day, and your fast is over, and you break that fast with prayer and thank God and break it, the spiritual, I don't even know if the joy is the word, but it's the end of oppression. Everybody knows what it's like to feel oppression, okay? And you'd be amazed what just a fast will do for that and to get rid of that. But when you do fast, don't make a big thing of it. Do it quietly, okay? Oftentimes, Bill Randall used to say, it's good maybe to tell a friend, somebody else that might be watching out for you, helping you during that period of time, okay? But you keep it quiet and you don't make a big thing of it or anything else. And you fast. All right. Now, says this, verse 17, but thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head and wash thy face. Okay? In other words, just dress normal, act normal. You know, go out there and act like, hey, everything's just fine and handle it that way. Okay? And then he says, verse 18, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. Now, to me, the reward, again, is for the most part, has been the end of an oppression. And it's right now I'm not being oppressed, so it's hard for me to think about it. But when you're being oppressed, it's hard to think about anything else, okay? Things don't taste good. Nothing's going right or anything else. And so to take that time and fast, that's been the first reward that I'll get. But there's other things where I've just fasted and asked the Lord, you know, something terrible going on. And I always remember when Ruth Ann and I were in South Carolina and everything had fallen apart for us. And we just didn't know what to do. And I remember just the two of us fasting and me just begging God. And I remember one morning, God just made it so clear everything I was to do. It was just so obvious what I was to do. All this just unfolded, you know, not Black Creek or whatever, but just the idea of get back to New York. Here's what you do with your children. Here's what you're going to do with this. Here's what you're going to do with that. And we needed that. We needed it. And God rewarded me. He showed me what to do, okay? And it was clear to me. And, you know, when you're looking for the will of God, there's nothing like being confident and it just being clear, yes. Knowing what to do. Boy, it's such a wonderful thing to have. And God blessed us with that. Yes?
How do you know the difference between, like, spiritual oppression and either, like, just depression or physical other things, but just how do you know?
Well, experience is one of the ways, okay? But, you know, what Tanya's question was this. How do you know the difference between just depression, other kind of oppressions that go on, and spiritual oppression? You know, my mentor, Bill Randall, used to say this. He used to say, I've been sick. He said, I've been injured. He said, I've been poor. He said, I've gone through all sorts of things, and none of those ever affected my spiritual life like exhaustion. Exhaustion affects your spiritual life, being so tired, okay? And he said, that will affect your spiritual life. That will really get to it. the physical and the spiritual mixed together, okay? We have people in this church who grew up under horrible circumstances. Some of you can look at that from the outside, but you didn't grow up with that, okay? So it's not something that, you know, you can necessarily identify with. But they grew up with horrible circumstances where depression was a daily and an awful thing, okay? And a miserable thing. And of course, then everybody handled it with medicines and this and that and everything else. And when most of the time, just a change of lifestyle would have done wonders, okay? That's why in this church, we have people who come in here who, and let me say this again. I don't want to get in between you and your doctor. It's not my job, okay? I don't ever want anybody saying, well, my pastor said don't do this. No, I've always said, you go to your doctor and discuss this or that. But I want you to understand, I went through and watched my son-in-law graduate from medical school about 6-7 years ago, and 300 people crossed that stage. And his father turned and said, now multiply those 300 by 300,000. That's how much it costs to get a medical degree, $300,000. And that was one of the lesser ones. That's just the one in Erie, Pennsylvania, you know, where you kind of go in and drive through or whatever. Not. But it's not one of the more exalted ones, but $300,000. If he sets up by himself as a doctor, very few can afford to do that nowadays, it probably has cost him $200 to $300 an hour to keep an office open. So in you walk, and you're going through depression, you're going through a miserable time, and Medicaid is going to give him $25 for this visit. How much time can he spend with you? He can't. One of the scandals to American psychiatry right now is American psychiatry, insurance, Medicaid, Medicare will not pay for consultation time. They only pay for medicine. Whereas the European Union will give hours for a psychiatrist to really sit and talk to a person, try to really understand what's going on with this person, okay? And it's a huge scandal. I've seen articles and things on it now where in the United States, all they're going to do is just give you medicine. And Irvin Kirsch, Jewish man out of New York City, who prescribed antidepressants for 30 years in New York City, and he wrote a book called The Emperor's New Drugs. And he finally came to the conclusion that these drugs aren't doing anything. Okay. Now, why does he say that? Here's why. In order for an antidepressant to be passed by the FDA, it has to pass 2 clinical trials. What's a clinical trial? Well, what they have to do is they have to beat a placebo twice. In a clinical trial, what's the measuring point? By what's called Hamilton points. In other words, Kyle, are you having trouble eating? Yes, I am. All right, that's 2 Hamilton points, okay? Are you having suicidal thoughts? Yes, that's 6 points, okay? You know, are you having trouble concentrating? That's 3 points. At some point, all right, you are depressed. That's the standard. Oh, you got 2 more points. You are clinically depressed. You ever hear that? My doctor says I'm clinically depressed. What is that? You hit these Hamilton points. You hit that, okay, when they ask you those questions. So in order for an antidepressant to pass the FDA muster, it has to have been put against in a blind trial. 100 people are on the placebo, 100 people are on the antidepressant, okay? If that antidepressant can 2 different trials beat a placebo by 2 Hamilton points, it can be passed. You know what Irvin Kirsch found? Some of them had been trialed over 100 times and finally passed 2 and were put on the market. Okay? There was no limit to how many times it could be tried.
What's a placebo?
A placebo is where you just have a sugar pill you think is the real thing. All right, it's a fake one. So that when you come in, you don't know if you're on the fake one or the real one. So 100 of them are on the fake one, 100 on the real one, and the doctors don't know the difference, and the people participating don't know the difference. Okay, so right off the bat, imagine that whatever antidepressant your doctor gives you probably had to be tested 100 times past a sugar pill in order to win, okay? The next thing is this. One of the problems with antidepressants are the side effects. Most medicines have side effects, you know, caution, dizziness, whatever else, you know, that might go on. So a side effect might be, you know, dry mouth, and a side effect might be, you know, a little bit more trouble sleeping. There's different side effects that can come from an antidepressant. So the holy grail that they looked for in medicine was an antidepressant without side effects, okay? So what do antidepressants do? Well, you have serotonin uptake inhibitors, you know. In other words, the serotonin in your brain is, and they think, that's why they call it a chemical imbalance. They think that chemical imbalance, the serotonin's wrong. So your brain uptakes it sometimes. They think it's doing the wrong, so they inhibit the uptake of the serotonin. Sometimes they inhibit the production of the serotonin, okay? The antidepressants work two different ways because the theory is that it's a chemical imbalance. Irvin Kirsch has now proved that that is ridiculous. That is as stupid as when they used to think you didn't need to wash your hands to do surgery, okay? He said new generations of doctors will never be taught that. We've hurt 50 years of people by thinking that is a chemical imbalance.
Forgive me for interrupting where you're at, but
no.
I don't need it. But my wife and I, when we were visiting down in one of the places we went recently, we watched an expose about these drugs, and it said they don't work. And actually what they do after like about 10 years is they rename and repurpose the drug because they don't work for anything.
That's right. He was just saying that a lot of times they rename and repurpose the drug over a period of time after people have been given it. The point is, you walk into the doctor's office, you're on Medicaid, he's got this unbelievable bill that he's got to take care of. What's it cost to keep these offices open? You're on Medicaid, he's going to get $25, $35, so he just quickly writes you up. He asks you those questions, assigns you a number, and then writes a prescription. Then you come back and say, that didn't help. Well, I'll double it. Okay. Do you realize amongst young girls in high school now it's chic to talk about, well, I'm on so many CCs, but my sister's on this many, all right? And what they found is that doesn't help. You know what the number one thing a depressed person needs? Reach to help.
Right.
Reach to someone.
Yeah.
Talk to someone. Hey, I'm going through depression. I'm going through a hard time. That's the number one thing they need. And that's why placebos worked, because they went to the doctor and said, I need help. He gave them a pill and they got help. And that placebo, a sugar pill, worked. Why? Because they needed help, okay? That's what they needed. So what ended up happening, they developed an antidepressant that had zero side effects. And this is what set Irvin Kirsch off. It could never beat a placebo. Never. 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 They could not even get it to beat one clinical trial. And yet they knew it was doing everything in the brain the others were doing without side effects. And here's what Irvin Kirsch finally figured out. You ever hear on the radio, we're looking for people to participate in this study for, you know, advanced diabetes, and we're looking for people, you know, and so they're looking for those kind of people. What kind of people get into a study for depression? Someone who's the first time they've been depressed? No. Someone who's gone through depression for a long time, hoping for something new. So the first thing that happens, Irvin Kirsch found out that the double blind gets busted quickly. Because they're taking the pill, there's no side effect, and they realize that's the placebo. They're experienced. They know all these medicines have side effects. Oh, I have dry mouth. I have the real thing, okay? So when a medicine came out that had no side effects, everyone thought it was the placebo and said it wasn't helping them. Even though physically it did the same thing in their brain that the other ones did, okay? And the book is called The Emperor's New Drugs. I would have every pastor in America read that just to be able to deal with these people. So when people come in here, and quite often the Medicaid people are medicated, okay? That's just how they're dealt with. They're the poor, just put pills in them, you know, and, you know, send them away. And so the thing is, when they come in here, one of the first things I'll discuss with them, if they begin to come here and their lifestyle changes, I'll tell them, why don't you discuss with your doctor trying to go off of this and tell your doctor your lifestyle has changed. We've never had a doctor who wasn't thrilled. Huh. You know how depressing it must be for a doctor just passing those things out over and over again? And by the way, those drug companies are making more than Walmart, GM, all these companies together. They're just, it's unbelievable the money that rolls through there, okay? Right. That's going on through those drug companies. And again, all on a scam with the idea they have medicines that really took hundreds of times to beat a placebo, okay? And yet people think, they feel that side effect and feel, this is helping me, this is helping me, this is helping me, okay? And no, all it is you feel the side effect and therefore feel you're getting help, and that's helpful. Feeling you're getting help is helpful. It just is, okay? So how do you know the difference between when you're being spiritually oppressed and physically oppressed? There may not be a difference. Okay, because the devil's going to use your past to mess with you. Okay? He's going to use your past. He's going to use awful things that have happened to you. He's going to use awful things you've done. Okay? He's going to use all that kind of stuff to, you know, to give this sense of misery. For me, when I'm in depression, doesn't happen very often. Takes more intelligence to be depressed, but... I'm like the guy in Mad Magazine, what me worry, you know, but the thing is, when I'm in depression, almost always it's because I have ignored a duty somewhere. I've ignored one, okay? Something I should have done. I should have written that letter to Aunt So-and-so, but I put it off. I've put it off successfully enough, I've forgotten about it, but my subconscious has not. And usually if I'm putting off one thing, I'm putting off a number of things. I get into a rut like that. And now I find myself miserable and depressed because I'm not taking care of things that I should be taking care of. And yet I can't even remember what it is. So when I find myself that way, I actually begin to do a purge and look, what haven't I done? And I begin to look and try to go through things and take care of every single bit of that stuff. Now let me tell you something. You know, when your favorite uncle dies, you're going to be depressed. All right? It's a hard thing. Miss Shirley came in today, and it was just a joy to me to see Miss Shirley come in because she's got leukemia. She's in her 80s. She got COVID. That's toast. Okay? Most people die with that. Now, for Miss Shirley, that would have been a wonderful thing. Absent from the body, present with the Lord. But not for us. All right? Not for us. We'd have gone through kind of a, you know, depressing time. All right? And, you know, it would have been a hard thing to have been without her, all right? So, you know, there's legitimate reasons for depression and for that kind of thing. But there are people who, because of their past, because of dysfunctions, because of awful things they've done to them, physical problems they have wrong with them or whatever else, it's hard for them sometimes to have good days, okay? It's hard for them. And you know what? Spiritually get right. Okay? Spiritually get right. If fasting will help that, do it. History is full of people who've had horrible things happen to them, who've lived successful, joyful lives. Okay? History is full of people with terrible disfigurements and problems who've lived successful, joyful lives. Okay? I've often said this, and in my early days here, and I saw about Pastor Hain about this. You know, in my early days here, we had that group of that, you know, original 11, 13 people who were here. And pretty mature people, okay? Average age well over 70, they ought to be mature. But the people I brought in were people like Tanya, who was just, in those days, in really bad condition. Emotionally, psychologically, terrible condition, okay? Amy and Dale, you know, they go out and fight on the front and, you know, and miserable and, you know, it used to be wherever Amy and Dale sat, the hymnals and the pew Bibles would be torn up because Luke and Autumn would tear them all to pieces while they're sitting there. And, you know, to this day, I praise those original people for putting up with that. Can you imagine that? How many churches could you go into where they put up with having a couple come in and their children tear all the hymnals and the stuff up? And those original people put up with it. And look at the value that came out of that. But in those early days, we had people of that. We had some, I can't remember their names, that came through here. I mean, Debbie Dohanty, you know, now Debbie Bell, Randy's mother, man, she brought some people through here, all right? And she did. I mean, my goodness, there was an everlasting parade. Brother McVeigh said when she left, she said, you'll never get a new person, all right? And, you know, she just brought all these people in. And so the thing is, we go through with the, we taught them to sing. You know, that idea of listening to preaching and that kind of thing. And they actually came to the point where they enjoyed that and liked this. And, wow, this is a good thing. And it was kind of funny because then it began to attract people who came from better backgrounds. Because they'd come in here and they didn't know we're all a bunch of goofheads looking like good fundamentalists. All right, you know. And, you know, they come in here and say, wow, you know, isn't this something or whatever. And but in those days, we had a lot of people who just really suffered terrible, horrible psychological problems, okay? And they just had. Some of you'd weep just to go through this stuff. I made Tanya, you know, stand up here and read her testimony one day that she's got on the internet. And people just began to understand what that's like. You know, what's it like to grow up in a house where your mother lets her boyfriends rape you on a regular basis and then blames you for it happening? And, you know, what's it like to grow up that way? And what's it like to grow up where your mother sends you out selling the dope, you know, because you won't get arrested, you're 5 years old? What's it like for your mother to leave a week at a time and leave you with all the little children? And, you know, you're babysitting them and taking care of them and you're just on your own and your mother comes and says, I wish I'd aborted you. And, you know, what's it like to grow up that way or whatever else? And then, you know, is she the only one? No, we've got people going through all sorts of stuff like that. I pick on Tanya right now because I can pick on her. She can handle me talking about that right now. I have some people who they'd have trouble for me going through that kind of stuff that's gone on in their lives. And one of the graces that God has given us here is A, to put up with those people who come in, and sometimes they're tough to put up with. Okay? They've had some awful stuff happen to them. And, take a dog that's been abused and kicked and everything else, and you know, it's not real loving when you take it in the house. All right? It's going to bite. It's going to snap. It's going to do terrible things to you or whatever else. And yet, Miss Pam can make a dog like that lover. All right? She can do it. And, I should learn to do that. This church has learned. Okay, to do that. But at the same time, those people often have far more oppression, terrible things going on, but it is spiritual as well as physical. Those two get tied together. Fasting is a good way, whatever that means to you. We have fasted here as a church one time. I thought it was very successful. What we did, we had a number of people ill, particularly Neil Ford going through a very hard time, had some other people. So we took a Wednesday, we fasted, and then broke fast after a Wednesday night service. The ladies had a very simple thing with some fruits and things like that downstairs. And I thought it was very effective, okay? I thought it was just a good thing for the church. I don't lightly do that. I don't want to make it a ceremony or something we do of that sort. But yet I would look to do that again if that's something that was needed. And, just try to get a hold of God's attention. If you remember with Esther, here the whole race is about to get wiped out. And she tells everybody, all right, then don't drink any water, eat any food for 3 days. Well, let me say, if the Chinese army was parked 100 miles away, our army had been defeated, they're going to come with tanks and half tracks, and they're going to start rounding people up for concentration camps. Think you'd find it easy to fast and pray to God? Probably be pretty easy, okay? Probably be pretty easy to do that. And so Esther said, all right, don't drink anything, don't eat anything for 3 days. And they didn't. And that going without drink for 3 days, imagine the misery of that, living in one of those hot climates like that. And yet they did it, okay? So don't be afraid to fast the time comes. If you do fast, don't make a huge thing, blowing a trumpet, hey, folks, I'm fasting today, or whatever else. There might be people you need to tell. Definitely make sure that your mate and you both understand you're fasting, okay? And you have, and you men especially, you get your wife's permission. It'll mean a lot to her, okay? And you women, get your husband's permission. It'll mean a lot to them, okay? And you say, well, what about the children? Well, it might be that one day with the children, they have just a simple bland cornflakes, and at lunch they have just a bland, peanut butter sandwich, and at supper, some simple little thing like, okay, well, so, this is a day of fasting. They're not hungry. They're eating food, but it's not sweetmeats and pleasant bread, okay? You can do that as a family and go through that. And then break fast when the time comes. Rejoice in the Lord. And I think you'll find, even when it is physical oppression and, emotional and all that, I think you'll even find relief there, okay? Because you have a great God who sees that. All right, Father, I do thank you now for the chance that we've had here, and thank you for this study on fasting, and I thank you that you who see these things secretly will reward us openly. And I pray this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you. I forgot about your phone up there, lass.